Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome into the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buccanani. Chris, my friend, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. Jim, we had a nice week of warm weather in Happy Valley, and now it's going to go back to freezing, so it's March. And that's my signal that we're closer and closer to the blue and white game. And blue and white Saturday is in my top five favorite holidays. It's number five. It's five, but it's top five.
But it still made it to the top five list. I'm with you.
And I love it.
It's funny you tie the weather to the blue-white game because we have had some of the most glorious weather for the blue-white games on the positive side, and we have also had the crappiest weather for it. And that is absolutely the biggest variable of whether I'm going to have a good time or not.
For sure. James Franklin has been blessed with mostly awesome blue-white game weather. Meanwhile, Bill O'Brien, your buddy, we had some of the craziest blue-white weather while that guy was our head coach. Now, correlation is not causation, Jim. I'm just saying.
Just saying. Well,
snow one time on a blue-white Saturday, which is just mind-boggling.
And it wasn't just snow. It was blowing snow.
Oh, the wind was crazy. Crazy.
Yes. As long as we're going down the weather path, I just want to point this out. You know, middle of the week when we had the 72 degrees, on my Facebook page where it pops up memories.
Yeah.
7 years ago to that day, we had 2 feet of snow. And I apparently posted a picture from my backyard with the snow piled up. So how's that for a difference, whatever that was, March 13th, 14th, whatever the day of the week was. And it went from 2 feet of snow to 72 degrees. I prefer the 72 degrees. But anyway, you know, Chris, let's
quickly
move forward.
Jim, that makes me think of a story to pull it back to Penn State. I always wonder about that because the weather is so volatile here in central Pennsylvania. How does that impact recruiting? Like, if you get blessed with great weather on a recruiting weekend, does that sometimes help you then versus when it's really crappy? Because, I mean, there's nothing like State College with pleasant weather like we had in the middle of last week when it's sunny and it's in the 70s. I mean, it's just amazing. This bucolic setting, it's like you've died and gone to football heaven. And I think that's got to help. But does it hurt if you've got the really lousy weather and it shows off the other negative side? And as far as I can tell, because I've watched it over the years. I've watched who have we brought in and the weather's in bad versus who comes in on the really nice weekends. I don't think it matters too much. And this is my theory why. I was just talking with a guy this past week who played here in the 1970s, and he was talking about his recruiting trips. And he said, I was taken to all the top places. I went to Michigan, and I went to Ohio State. I went to Pitt, Maryland, all kind of places in the general area around Pennsylvania that at the time would have been gunning for a top football recruit. And he said, every place they put me up in a beautiful hotel. And I was treated like a king and got the full 5-star treatment. And then I came to Penn State and they're like, here's your partner, Jimmy Cephalo. Like, here's the cot in his room you're going to sleep on. Like, good luck. Go show him college. And so I was thinking about how Joe was infamous for that. And from what I know, talking to guys who come to Penn State on the recruiting visit, it's not quite the same, but there is still a distinct difference between the Penn State recruiting experience and everywhere else in terms of truth in advertising. And I think because of that, because we are just very upfront and again, just compared to our peers, very what you see is what you get. We don't get punished If you come here in the middle of not a blizzard, but if it's rainy and it's cold and it's crappy, because I'm sure, we tell them, we're like, hey, look, yeah, it's awesome, but just, be prepared. This is not what you're going to get 24/7 if you come to Penn State.
Well, just a heads up. I'm glad you talked about recruiting. For those of you who are listening to us in State College on 98.7 Fox Sports, coming up right after us is our show with Landon. And our show this week is going to be about the recruiting process. And Landon talks about his whole recruiting process and how he ends up at Penn State. And if you know Landon, as you do, you're always going to get great stories from him. But it leads, Chris, to me talking about that with there is a different style of player in general that comes to Penn State and the reasons why they come to Penn State versus other schools. And you probably could talk better about this than I can. And you hit it with the, you know, Penn State gives you, here's full disclosure, this is who we are, truth in advertising, as opposed to the other schools that are just whining and dining these guys coming in, and especially now with NIL becoming part of that conversation, and with the recent court ruling that, hey, schools have at it, you can do whatever you want. Now it's essentially, how much money can we give you, right?
Right. And it's a complete open market. You can, you know, you can entice recruits, you can entice guys on existing rosters, you name it. And I do think because we have that approach to bringing talent in, you can attribute that at least partially to why comparably Penn State does not seem to be losing a lot of talent to the transfer portal. It's not saying we don't have guys transfer, right? Everybody has a little bit of attrition, but in terms of keeping our core roster together, our key contributors, I think Penn State has done remarkably well in holding the roster together in this era. Now, it's like the Reagan quote about freedom is one generation away from extinction. Well, like that roster stability is one offseason away from extinction, because the further and further we get away from the post 2019 era of college football, you're going to have more and more recruits who aged into watching the current era, and their conception of what the talent marketplace is in the sport is going to be so dramatically different that I don't think the greatest sales pitch in the world delivered by as skillful a salesman as James Franklin might make the difference. It may just be that you're dealing with a generation of football players who look at it as the open market, and that is what it is. But for now, at least, cross your fingers, knock on wood, you know, tie a little string around your finger. Penn State has been very fortunate in that regard. And I do think it's not just coincidence. Our approach is contributing to that for sure.
I have no doubt about that, the approach leads to it, that there's more going on for these players than going to the highest bidder. And in talking about NIL with fellow fans, listeners, old guys like myself, Chris, who just say, the game's going to hell, NIL, it's the ruination of football. I try to explain that, are these players any different than you and I out in the job market, you know, where, yes, the salary you're going to get paid is a huge part of any decision you make on where you're going. Hopefully, with maturity, we also look at other things, you know, job satisfaction. Is it close to home? Is it an easy commute? Are the hours reasonable? Is the boss reasonable? Is the company culture reasonable? Those should all be part of this decision-making process for these student athletes. The players who don't consider those things, that's a different kind of guy, I think, than the guy who says, you know what, that is part of the experience. And I am concerned about the atmosphere, the culture, the academics of where I'm going. And to Penn State's credit and James Franklin's credit specifically, I think that's the kind of player they want, who is someone worried about all those other things. Now, hey, if Penn State's offering zero and the school down the street is offering $1 million, Chris, I'd say, hey, go Pitt. You know, if they're offering me $1 million and Penn State's not offering me anything, right?
Yeah, for sure. So, and that's the struggle that I think Penn State is maybe having right now, where I don't know that we even really are doing a tremendous job of having the NIL funds pool available to stay competitive. But clearly we're doing well enough to have not lost any of our star players. And it's not 100% just, you know, for the love of dear old state and the great recruiting sales pitch. So I look, the one thing I will say about your comparison of current players to you and me in the job market is that you do have the conference, and to a lesser extent, the NCAA, really, this is now the conferences that are imposing on schools all these obligations that they have to their players. So, you know, if right now, if you enroll at Penn State, you have benefits available to you, like not just in terms of what you can get in NIL, and people maybe don't realize that the players are now currently getting some disposable spending cash through their cost of living stipend. Now, I mean, you know, listen, in the modern era, folks in the media and the players, you know, you turn your nose up at that it's quote unquote only $5,000. Like, trust me, talking to guys who played in the area when they didn't get jack squat. Like, you don't want to put the only in there when you say the current players are getting $5,000 a semester. But there are a bunch of things that you're mandated to give a player, whether it works out after you offer them a scholarship or not. One of them being that you have to pay for their education. And so the one difference is that they always say, don't have company loyalty because they can fire you at any time. And then you lose all the benefits of what you put in at that place. And that's not apples to apples with college football right now, because they can't really fire you at any time. And even if they do, you know, like the old SEC, like, man, your ankle's not looking too good, son. In the Big Ten, at least, they still have to honor paying for your college degree and probably if you want to go on and get a master's afterwards. So there's a little bit of a difference.
And that can't be forgotten. And the old timers will always say, well, they're getting room and board and the scholarship isn't that enough. Well, you know what? Whatever you're being paid in your job and someone offers you twice as much to go elsewhere, gee, wasn't it enough in the first place? Well, it's all relative. Anyway, Chris, I have to ask you when we get back about Nick Saban going to Washington and he talks about all this. I want to get your take when we come back. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Chris Bucanani. I am Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. And Chris, you and I, in quarter number one, we were chatting about how things are going with the whole recruiting process. And we did a little bit of the, well, back in my day, here's how it was. And things are very different. And coming up this past week, or I should say occurring last week, we had Nick Saban. Mr. Saban goes to Washington. And he's going to give his take on things. And before I get started on this, Chris, have I ever brought out Salty Jim with you yet?
I'm aware of the character of Salty Jim. I don't know that I've shared the microphone with Salty Jim just yet.
All right. Well, then I'm going to make your day.
I'm going to have the experience.
You're going to have the experience, okay? All right. I'm going to come out Salty Jim full force today, and it's about Nick Saban. I want to get your take on it, but here's Salty Jim's take. And first, I'm going to quote Mr. Saban directly. here's what he said in Washington. The whole idea that we created a play for pay, a pay for play model in college athletics has created some issues in being able to actually have a program and a system that creates some kind of balance. All venues have some guidelines and rules that will create competitive balance, which right now we don't have in college athletics. It's whoever wants to pay the most money, raise the most money, buy the most players is going to have the best opportunity to win. And he goes on to say, all these things that I believed in for all these years, 50 years of coaching, no longer exist in college athletics. It was always about developing players. It was always about helping people be more successful in life. All right, Chris, I want to cherry pick some of these phrases that he used. He's talking about the lack of competitive balance now with NIL money. All right? Nick Saban is complaining about the lack of competitive balance. Can I share a few things with you, Chris?
Please, please do.
How about in a span of 10 years, Alabama had the number one recruiting class 8 out of 10 years. If you expand it to 13 years, it's first or second in 12 out of 13 years. That's apparently the competitive balance he was talking about. Now, he's talking about maybe some other teams can compete with Alabama with NIL. Because until NIL, Alabama had the best facilities, the most coaches, the most money put into coaches, the most money put into facilities, the total advantage with alumni money to support all of this. I'm not going to accuse them of money under the table. Anyone else can make their own decision on that. I'm not going to mention it. But every other way, he has had the competitive balance. And oh, by the way, Mr. Saban, who's complaining about the kids, the actual players that you and I go to see, Chris, he has an issue with them only worrying about money. This is the same guy who was making over $10 million a year. And by the way, it wasn't enough for him because he actually has it in his contract, Chris, that other people can't make more money than him. If other coaches get raises, he's got to get a raise too because, God forbid, they make more money than him.
I forgot about that.
And, oh, by the way, Chris, this is the same guy. He also talks about the integrity and trust. This is the same guy as coach of the Miami Dolphins literally said, no, I am not going to Alabama to coach. And later that day took the Alabama job. So is Nick Saban the guy who should be screaming about players making NIL money? Is he the guy who should be telling us there's no competitive balance? Is he the right guy for that, Chris?
Well, Jim, I think you just laid out a very compelling case that he is not, right? And I've always kind of had a soft spot for Saban. I think in part because I know he always had a lot of respect for Joe, and I like that about him. And there are many things I do respect about the guy, for sure. You can't take anything away from his success. But it pains me to have to praise Jim Harbaugh for being kind of a progressive thinker in terms of speaking out on behalf of his own players versus like criticize Saban for what he said in front of Congress. But yeah, I think you've nailed a lot of the key points. One thing I do believe, Jim, is that all of us, but I think especially people who get into positions of great wealth or success or notoriety or all three, especially for long periods of time, we develop this amazing carrying capacity for cognitive dissonance where we can just be complete hypocrites and truly just not be aware of it. There are certain folks in high profile positions in politics right now. I'm not going to name who they are. It doesn't matter. We're not trying to get political here. But my theory, I listen to people criticize these folks and they say, oh, so-and-so is such a liar. They lie all the time. They're liars. And I draw the distinction to say, okay, but you understand the word lying means you know you are consciously deceiving. And it's like the George Costanza thing. It's not a lie if you believe it. And so I think about some of these folks who are prominent in our political process. And unfortunately, right now we are dealing with an abundance of people who I believe, Jim, that I could say things that are just patently false, no truth to them whatsoever, and pass a lie detector test because in the moment, they're George Costanza. They believe it. And so when I listen to that quote, which you read very well, although I would quibble with you not pronouncing the word program, if you're quoting Nick Saban. Other than that, perfect. I listened to him talk about competitive balance, and I truly believe, Jim, that he believes it. I think if you strapped Nick Saban to a lie detector test, he'd pass it with flying colors, despite all the evidence to the contrary. Like we talk about Jim Harbaugh and contrast him with Nick Saban, it's no coincidence that Michigan was finally able to break through and win a national title in the first few years of the NIL era, right? It's no coincidence that Washington was able to make the college football final. And if we're being totally honest, if the game wasn't a little bit rigged, that there wouldn't have even been an SEC team in this year's four-team playoff. And I think whatever complaints you can have about the current setup we have of NIL plus transfer portal with no rules, no structure, and no guardrails. And I think there are some problems in terms of just marketing the sport and its long-term health. One tremendous benefit for fans and viewers, I think, is an uptick in parity, which has never really been a feature of college football since its beginning. There's never been competitive balance. It has always, always been a sport of haves and have-nots with a tremendous wealth gap. And so if anything, the ability for everyone to pay players above the table, it has made the sport a tad more egalitarian than it's been through most of its history. So yeah, that's not only is it not true, the opposite is true.
See, that is the fantastic point. What it really comes down to is Nick Saban is comfortable with, happy with, a system that works to his benefit.
Right, and exactly. When he says there's less competitive balance, what he actually means is that there's less opportunity for Alabama to dominate everyone else.
Exactly it. And what bothers me, I think, more than Nick Saban feeling this way, y'all brought up another great point, the George Costanza. Nick Saban, I'm sure in his heart of hearts, he believes this. He's been telling himself this for years, that, by the way, the reason why Alabama wins is his coaching genius, not the fact that he gets the best players, okay? Right, I'm sure he is convinced of that, but what bothers me is his ability to convince so many other people that that is the case, and that there are people buying into what he has to say. And just I'll let you kick in here in a second, but I've had my plan that I've put out there is I think the player should be paid, and I just picked a number out of my hat called, said, give the 85 scholarship players each $100,000, but they are tied to their school for 3 years. You fix, and you were the one who brought this up a couple weeks ago. The bigger issue is the transfer portal, which gives the players leverage to say, hey, I'll go where there's more money elsewhere. At any point, you get them to commit for 3 years, you pay them $100,000 a year. I got blowback from that. Oh my God, they're getting scholarships, Chris. They don't need $100,000. But 85 scholarship players receiving $100,000 is $8.5 million. Nick Saban alone makes well more than that, Chris, which to me just lends more to the hypocrisy.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jim, again, to the point about the blowback you got, it's like, well, look, are you a capitalist or not? Because, you know, it's the willing seller, willing buyer, and the right of American citizens to recoup their market value. And it's clear, it's abundantly clear that players in at least the Power Two schools are in a position where there's enough revenue coming in where their services would be worth that plus the value of their scholarship. And I think it's unfortunate that Saban has kind of taken up this position, because I do think there's a truth in what he said also. Like, there are things that were valuable in the old system of college football that are being compromised and lost. And, you know, he could lend his imprimatur and the gravitas of being Nick Saban to pushing back and preserving a lot of that and reintegrating it into whatever the new system of college football is. But as we've discussed, there's no going back. I mean, the toothpaste is out of the tube. So I think, you know, he's fighting a losing battle on this front. I've been looking forward to seeing him on TV in the fall. I think he's going to be a nice addition to College Game Day. I'm going to be curious to see how he performs, you know, the environment of a live TV show where he's going to get live pushback versus a congressional hearing where it seemed like most people wanted to hear what he had to say.
Yes, exactly. And I have one more point I want to add to this conversation. I'm going to do that, Chris, when we come back right after this break. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Chris. I am Jim, or Salty Jim, if you want to know the truth, after I went into my tirade in quarter number two about Nick Saban. And Chris, I'm not done. Okay. Let me give you one more point. I was the one who brought up the comparison about, you know, adults out in the working world, job interview, and money is part of that conversation when we change jobs. So I don't think we can just say to these players, hey, money shouldn't be important to you. And even more so, remember, they only get 4 years to take a bite of the apple for the vast majority of them. Remember, most of these guys are not going to be playing on Sunday in the NFL and making the huge contracts, the huge money. So this opportunity in college is the opportunity to make money for the probably the best skill they have, which is playing football. So when I talked about paying the players $100,000, and you say, well, why does a college kid need $100,000? He doesn't need that. But as you pointed out, especially the big two conferences, they have plenty of money to compensate the players. The players are the talent. I do not go on Saturday afternoon, turn on my TV to watch Nick Saban play football. If they don't do even one shot of him on the sidelines, I'm okay with that. I pay to attend to watch the players play. I feel like they deserve something for it. Pay them $100,000. Now, what I do have the concern with, and as I pointed out, you brought this up a couple weeks ago, and it's a great point. When we're talking NIL, that really doesn't change the product on the field. It's the transfer portal that is changing the game. And the player who, yeah, we've all seen it, that player who's been in three or four different schools in his 4 years, if there were a way to take care of that, tie it into the money, the compensation of the players, you pretty much solve both problems at once, Chris. But I'm not hearing Mr. Saban say that. All he's doing is complaining about the lack of competitive balance and how rotten these kids are for wanting their fair share.
Yes. And again, in defense, moderate defense of Saban, because I'm mostly with you, I am sure it is very irritating to get into these meetings with players who you're trying to develop as young men and as football players. And a lot of them probably they're not seeing the field or they're not getting as many snaps at Alabama because they're not good enough. They're not well-developed enough. They're not prepared to play and compete in the SEC. And the questions you get are, how are you going to guarantee me playing time and how much are you going to pay me or I'm going to leave, right? Like, that's probably pretty exhausting after a time. So I can understand the frustration where I get off the train is this idea that we can just magically put the genie back in the bottle. Boy, that's not a great metaphor, is it? Because by what other means would you put a genie back in the bottle, Jim, but magic? But anyway, you're not reverting. You're not reverting to the era which we are already starting to romanticize, which is college football from the Princeton-Rutgers game up to the end of the 2019 football season. Like, that is not going back. So we would much rather hear an intelligent conversation about how can we take this Frankenstein's monster we have right now, which has been assembled from pieces of the old order and sort of half-imagined alpha versions of the new, and get to a final product that is more equitable and consistent with the direction that society is going in terms of how we feel the players ought to be treated, without losing a lot of the benefits that accrued to the old system. Like, that's the conversation we need to be having. And unfortunately, as much as I hate to admit it, I thought Harbaugh turned out to have been a better voice for that than Nick Saban. And now Harbaugh's in the NFL, and I'm sure he doesn't care. He's worried about the Chargers are losing all their players. He's just got to win football games now.
Well, I would have liked to have seen Nick Saban 10 years ago come out saying, you know what, they're paying me $8 million a year and these kids are getting nothing. Come on, NCAA, we need to do something about that. And you know what?
Yeah.
I think every one of us head coaches should take a 10% pay cut or 20% pay cut so the money goes there, because I'm such a molder of young men and I'm about being fair. No, he's not. No, he is not. Nick Saban has been about Nick Saban, and so have the coaches. And now to make this smooth segue here to the next topic I wanted to ask you about, which is the there's continued conversations with the playoffs. And interestingly enough, they haven't figured out how they're going to do automatic bids, but they have figured out the money, Chris. That they figured out. And again, here are the adults who are complaining about the kids making money. And what is their biggest thing? They want more money. And we see the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, they don't want to get the more money based on how many teams earn their way into the playoffs. They want it to just come automatically to them. Big Ten, Southeast Conference makes more money than those other conferences. Right now, we know pretty much, come playoff time, there'll be more teams from those conferences. But really, do we know for sure that in 5 years, if the Big 12 is going to have better teams? My bet is they won't.
It's a safe gamble. My feeling is, like, if you're the Big Ten in the SEC and you're like, no, we must assure with 100% certainty that we're going to continue to enjoy an advantage over the schools of the Big 12 and the ACC. It's like, well, guys, I understand, like, 100 years worth of precedent may not be enough now that, you know, you've stripped the Big 12 of Texas and Oklahoma, but like, it's as safe a bet as you're going to find.
But the problem I have is, again, where the adults, when the players are the ones who are going to benefit, the adults are complaining about that as if the players, all they care about is money, how wrong that is. But Chris, what are the adults doing? What are the people who are in charge of college football doing? They are setting the example. The SEC, Big Ten are just saying it's all about the money. Is that not exactly what Nick Saban is complaining about with his players? It's awful, guys. It's terrible. All the players care about is money. That is it. Nothing else. Well, Coach Saban, are you complaining about the conferences also? Are you complaining about your own conference when you are, you know, testifying in front of Congress?
For me and not for thee, Jim.
That is exactly it. But, you know, I keep bringing it back to Saban and Salty Jim. Let's talk about this playoff situation. And the end result of it is, are we just obviously headed down the path where, you know, they've got a notch on their belt already? The Big Ten took out the Pac-12, okay? No other way to put it.
Yeah.
The Big Ten did that to them. Is that
very
now,
cynically too, right? Like they entered into that alliance that had nothing on paper, and there was just basically a handshake agreement. Hey, we're not going to poach each other's teams. And we used that as a stalling tactic until we, and I say we as the Big Ten, we were ready to roll in and poach the Pac-12's teams.
And we did it.
Just like this cynically predatory behavior.
And are we not, because there's already the television contracts which created discrepancy between what Big Ten and Southeast Conference schools are getting and what the Big 12 and ACC are getting. This now just makes that gap even larger. If you're Florida State, if you're Clemson, you've got to get out. If you're Miami, you got to get out of the ACC, don't you? Are we now, the clock is ticking, is it not, for the demise of the Big 12 and the ACC?
Unfortunately, I think that's the case. And again, I say unfortunately just because I really enjoyed the regionality of college football. And I know that there are very passionate fan bases at those schools that do not want to see their programs shut out of contention for the national championship and the opportunity to play college football at the highest level. But yeah, I mean, the rapid fire rigging of the system is there for everyone to see. It's like, that's the direction that it's headed. And I do wonder whether or not we might end up seeing a split into separate tiers once again, where the Big Ten and the SEC occupy their own tier, and then there's one that's just a notch below, and that contains the leftover programs from the Pac-12 and the Big 12 and the ACC.
I think it has to go that way.
It seems that way, yeah.
The money discrepancy is so large that you're not going to be able to compete if you're, I don't know, Texas Tech in the Big 12. And if it's why Florida State is trying so hard to get themselves out of the ACC, and you want to talk about self-inflicted wounds, the ACC teams all voted to give that grant of rights thing to protect their conference, that they would stick together, which I guess is another lesson in trying to do what's best for the group isn't a smart way to go. They should have just selfishly said, hey, no, we don't want to tie ourselves into it, right?
In retrospect, yes. It's kind of remarkable to me. I don't really know too much about the process by which that grant of rights is negotiated. But it's amazing to me that so many universities, because I know how, you know, university administrations operate, were so willing to just frivolously sign away such a valuable chit as their broadcast rights for such a long period of time. I mean, you just don't really see contracts that extend that long in almost anything. And the fact that they were able to get every member school to look at that and say, yeah, that's good, we're in. It's shocking to me. I would love to go back and investigate that a little bit more just to see how that process evolved.
It would be very interesting to take a closer look, but I have a theory on how it happened, Chris. I'm going to present that theory to you when we come back, see what you think, but we'll wait. I'll give it to you when we come back. Stay tuned. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Chris. I am Jim. Chris, we've been discussing this whole state of college football, starting with Nick Saban testifying in front of Congress, and well, it's pretty obvious my thoughts on that, but it kind of leads to the rest of what's going on. The conferences are having their discussions about where they're going to go with the college football playoffs. There's no doubt it's all about the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference using their leverage to get more money out of it, and the poor ACC, they are stuck with their grant of rights, which essentially says, if a team would, it was, you know, the poison pill. If a team were to leave, they leave their television rights behind to the conference they were leaving. So Florida State can't just up and leave and join the Big Ten or the Southeast Conference. The ACC would retain their television rights, and that's worth a lot of money. So what you have, and of course, no other conference will take them if they don't have their television rights. Now, you asked the question, why in the world would, you know, a Florida State, a Clemson sign away those rights? And I think at the time, one of the differences is the NCAA has no power. The power is at the conference level, the conference commissioners. So the conference commissioner, Big Ten, Southeast Conference, they have the most power in college football. If anyone has more power, it would be ESPN and Fox, okay? And that's the way it works. I think when those grant of right things were coming up, it was a case of you have strong commissioners who lobbied for it to try to make it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't seem like seemed like a good idea at the time. It protects us. Our floor is maintained. We know we're going to still have a strong ACC. Everyone staying here. What they didn't realize is just how much stronger the Big Ten and Southeast Conference would get, just how much greener the grass would be across the fence. And now they're living with the repercussions of that, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild still, though, to me that there was no one in at least a few of these individual camps looking at that deal and anticipating just the possibility. Right? That conditions on the ground would change dramatically and that you would just be locked into this seemingly ironclad, although there's always a way out with enough money, deal for such a long period of time. It's just shocking to me. If anyone came to you, Jim, with a deal that said like, hey, I would like you to sign this contract and it'll be open for renegotiation in 2036. Like, wouldn't that immediately put the antennas up a little bit? Like, I'm not so sure about this.
Which, and I apologize for keep bringing this back to Nick Saban, but head football coaches, they signed those 10-year contracts, but they know they could get out of it. And if you're Nick Saban, you're smart enough to put in a clause that says, hey, by the way, if the other guy makes more money, you got to give me more money so I protect myself.
Right. Well, yeah. If you look at the negotiation process between one of these schools and their coaches, absolutely there's that back and forth about what the buyout is. Now, again, to your point, I guess the selling point of it was just extraordinary stability. We are going to send the message that we are all in lockstep and we are all together. But I don't know, if I was a university president at that time, I would have lobbied hard to reduce the years that I was locking my school into.
Well, we can say that pretty safely now. I wonder at the time, if this were prior to, which it was, prior to the Oklahoma, Texas, USC, UCLA abandoning their conferences, it may have looked a lot better at that time than it does now. Again, they should have been smart enough to look forward, but let's face it, these guys have not covered themselves in glory with their ability to negotiate contracts. You know, the Pac-12, if they hadn't gotten greedy with their television contract and thinking they were worth more than they really were, they perhaps could have gotten something done, kept their conference intact, but they didn't negotiate correctly. They misread the market. And the next thing you know, they're losing their headline team, USC. And after USC goes, the dominoes are just going to fall.
By the way, speaking of the Pac-12, I did see that Washington State losing in the semifinals of the Pac-12 basketball tournament meant that there would be automatic money flowing into the Pac-12 based on like conference qualifiers and things, at like getting another conference qualifier. And so what that means in practice is that Oregon State and Washington State get to keep that money. So chestnut checkers to Washington State. Far be it from me to say that they threw the game, but at the very least, they are benefiting from the outcome of having lost it.
They have. All right, Chris, I'm sure we're going to be talking about this topic over and over again throughout the offseason. I did want to hit you up on another topic. Let's talk just a little NFL football.
Sure. Big news for Penn Staters.
Yes. Our in-state fans, most are either Eagle or Steeler fans, and a lot of news between the two of them. First, we have Saquon Barkley signing with the Eagles. Then, just to add to the in-state intrigue, former Pitt Panther, former Pittsburgh Steeler, Kenny Pickett signs with the Eagles. In the meantime, Justin Fields becomes a Pittsburgh Steeler. What the
heck
is going
on? For nothing. The Eagles acquired Kenny Pickett for a bag of hammers, and then the Steelers turned around and got Justin Fields for a hammer, not even a whole bag.
Yeah, how do you react to this? I know you're an Eagles guy. First of all, start with Saquon Barkley. Your reaction to that?
Sure. Well, first of all, you may have seen the news that James Franklin potentially got the Eagles into some hot water with a tampering investigation. That seems to already be, you know, dissolving. So I'm not too concerned about that. I'm a little torn, if I'm being honest, Jim. As a Penn State fan who is also an Eagles fan, I'm emotionally all in. I am thrilled at the prospect of seeing Saquon Barkley in Midnight/Kelly Green. Like, that's going to be a lot of fun. As a dispassionate, rational fan, taking the Penn State part out of it, I am generally not in favor of spending a lot of money on the running back spot. That said, it's my understanding that Kellen Moore, the new offensive coordinator in Philly, who I like a lot, specifically identified Barkley and said, go out and get this guy. I can do all kinds of great things with him in my offense. And I do like the fact that it seems like management is being responsive to these new assistants we're bringing in. Vic Fangio on the defensive side too. If you're going to put a lot on the shoulders of your coordinators, I think it's fair to let them have some input into the personnel decisions. I think it's true that I've been following Saquon Barkley's career for 10 years now. And the only time I've seen him run behind competent blocking is when I looked at his high school tape when he was getting recruited. So I think it's tantalizing to imagine what he could do when you see what he's been able to do in New York. And then instead of putting him behind one of the worst offensive lines in the league, you put him behind one of the best and most dynamic that's filled with playmakers like Jalen Hurts and you know, the great receiving core that the Eagles have and their great line up front. So I also know a little bit now, having read some articles about it, that Howie Roseman, the Eagles general manager, who's an absolute wizard with this stuff, put together a pretty good contract where, even though Saquon's doing well for himself in terms of guaranteed money, which for him was the dividing line between the Giants and the Eagles, it's not going to be a brutal salary cap hit either to have him in Philly. So overall, I think it's a win. It cuts against the grain a little bit from the conventional wisdom in the league and how the Eagles have done business. But to get a playmaker of his caliber and put him into that offense and have it not be a tremendous burden on your overall salary cap, there's very little to complain about from my perspective.
My take on it, Chris, and yes, I'm a Penn State fan, but and an Eagles fan, but being the Penn State fan part of this, we had the opportunity to see him at Penn State for several years and understand that this is just not any random good running back. This is someone special. To use James Franklin's word, this is an elite back. And you brought up the point about the offensive line. We have not been able to see Saquon behind an offensive line. And I think there's we've seen NFL players for years and years stuck with bad teams. I'll go all the way back to not Peyton Manning, but Archie Manning being stuck on the New Orleans Saints, a bad team for pretty much his entire career. Barry Sanders was phenomenal, but had to play in Detroit with a not very good team. I just feel really good for Saquon now playing for a better team. He didn't end up with his entire career behind a bad offensive line and a bad team.
And he's a three-tool running back, which is very important to Philly. He's a great pass blocker. He's a good receiver, which is something that has been missing from Philadelphia's offense that I think they're going to look to integrate more this season. And he brings great intangibles, like absolutely an asset in the locker room to have him there. So, yeah, it's pretty much a home run acquisition as long as he can stay healthy, which is the question. But at the bare minimum, again, the way the contract is structured and the advantage of the good offensive line in Philly, although they will have the monumental task of replacing Jason Kelce, we've seen that that has been an advantage to the Eagles offense, where they can bring in a replacement level running back and get better than replacement level production out of him because of the offense around him and the blocking up front and the scheme and everything. So yeah, there is a little bit of a health risk with Barkley for sure, but I think you go into it knowing that the upside is tremendous. And if you have to play without him, you feel confident in your ability to bring other backs out of the rotation and still get decent production. And then of course you have all the other playmakers all over that offense.
That's the point that I think is most important, the playmakers. And this guy is a playmaker, a special playmaker. He's a weapon that you're adding to an offense that already had several weapons. I like it, Chris. I like it as a Penn Stater. I like it as an Eagles fan. But my fingers are crossed. Just stay healthy. Chris, that's going to have to be it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Having multiple sportsbook accounts is the simplest way to get the best available odds, and there's never been a better time to sign up. When you visit our page, signupexpert.com/KSN, you'll be connected to all the sportsbooks in your region. All of these sportsbooks have valuable sign-up offers for new users, and through our link, you'll automatically receive the top offer at each one. If you want to take advantage of these benefits, sign up for your next sportsbook at signupexpert.com/KSN or see the preferred sportsbook button on our app.